So I'm Ruth, and I'm a junior SRE at Pinterest. I'm the first that they've hired fresh out of college, so I have a vested interest in this topic. Could I get a show of hands? How many of you started your first SRE job within the past 2 years? Raise your hand. Wow, that's a good amount of you. And how many of you have been involved in helping mentor or train a new SRE? Nice. Awesome. Great. So the first question is, just to get us started, could you give us your name, the company that you work for, your role, and how you got into SRE work?
Hi, my name is Katie. I work for Circle CI. I graduated 4 years ago from art school, and I wanted to actually get into the tech world, so I found a job that didn't require programming experience per se. I was really tech savvy, and it was more of a personality interview. So I've been working with Circle CI now for 2 years, and I've been learning SRE on the job. And that's my role currently.
Thank you, Katie.
Good morning.
So my name is Saravanan. So people call me Sharan. That's a popular name in my organization right now. So like many people in this room, I also started as a system administrator approximately 20 years back, managing Linux, Novell, Solaris, all sorts of operating system. In fact, I had a series of certifications, like you name it, I added that time. So, but that is not good enough. So the organization I started working on had a lot of automation opportunities, and I did a lot of Perl and Shell-based automation and started taking larger challenges and problems using open source technologies. So the company impressed, so I developed this reputation what a system administrator with a developer mindset can bring into the table. So from that point, no stopping, I'm here today leading global teams, managing SREs who can contribute any level to the organization. I work for Yahoo for last 12 years, and my team is great and making big impact to the organization. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rita. Excuse me. I joined Google as an SRE about 8 months ago at the end of June. Previous to that, I was working as a software engineer, just doing web development, Ruby on Rails at Shopify. So this whole SRE thing is pretty new to me. And I kind of felt that when I was a software engineer, a lot of the production side of things was kind of a black box to me. Basically, I write software, I click a button, it deploys, and it just runs. Basically, running something like once successfully locally was kind of the same in my world as running that same thing, you know, in distributed production servers, having like millions of QPS hit it. So I was kind of curious about what it takes to, what the difference between those two are. So I decided to make the switch to SRE and find out.
Hey folks, my name is Andrew Widdowson, and this August I will have been at Google for 10 years as an SRE on search, and I'm now also co-leading, as of the last 2 years, with Jen, who's here in the audience, the SRE EDU program that trains and does monthly orientation for all incoming SRE. We're an organization of about 2,200 people, and we do 50 or 60 new people trainings per month. I came to Google and SRE with a completely different background. Did computer science at Carnegie Mellon, and then spent 2 years doing a machine learning approach to music playlist prediction for a consumer electronics company. And then one of my friends said, there's this crazy role I think you'd really like. I said, what? And I came to Google and tried it out and hated it. And about 6 to 8 months in, I said, I want to tell other people what I've learned so far. And suddenly I realized that I could make a big difference. So maybe out of a sense of catharsis, if nothing else, I started training a whole bunch of other folks, and the rest is history. I actually really love the SRE position. I really love what people can do with it. And I came around.
Hi, my name is Craig Sebenick. I was a SRE at LinkedIn for a number of years. Now I'm at a small startup called Matterport. I started out actually as a computational chemist. My first job out of grad school was as a sysadmin because I had all these tech skills. And then I moved to development. I was a Perl developer for many years. I was a Java developer for many years. And so I had this background in development, both in scientific computing and then and normal application development. Combined with my sysadmin, it just kind of naturally led to SRE.
Great. Thanks, everyone. So I've built this panel on purpose with a mix of junior and senior SREs and from people from both small and large companies. So a lot of the senior SREs that I meet have sort of a profile. They use computers when they're very young. They read Linux textbooks for fun. They spin up Linux systems outside of work. So the next question is, what are some good signals that somebody has the potential to be a good SRE? And this is a question that may be obfuscated by cultural factors.
So something that was really important for me in my job was that I didn't have experience in these things, such as other people with backgrounds of starting up Linux boxes. So I come from a completely different world. So I was really assessed on these qualities that could make a person a good SRE. So one of the main factors was really liking automation. So I remember in my interview, I was talking with them about liking to play Minecraft. That was something that came up with the CTO. We were just having a conversation, and I told them my favorite thing in Minecraft was to like automate all the systems in it. So I think that was something that really stood out. Another thing is that in my art program, I'm actually self-taught on a lot of different programs. I was not given any training on how to use Photoshop, how to use After Effects, and all these different programs, so I had to go teach myself all these things, and I think that was an important quality as well. And something else that I mentioned in my interview was that I'm a perfectionist, and I really want to do things right, and I think that's another important quality, because you can't just move fast and break things. That's not a possibility.
Thank you. So I'm actually leading my team for last like 10 years, and I'm a people manager. So I'll try to touch upon the soft skills side of most of the SREs that we need in these days. So the focus, the first thing I would say, focus is one of the things that we need to really seriously consider, because it's easy to get distracted. There are 100 ways always to get things done. So if you're not focused, you're lost. So before choosing a technology or a tool, do your learnings, like you read about it, you do experiments, and then come up with a proper recommendation before choosing the technology. So otherwise, you'll get lost. The second thing is, be a catalyst. Okay, so I see this many people coming to me and saying, I cannot change my team, the way they work. So because you find this many times in a matured organization, resistance to change what being followed or practiced, right? So the premise review process I came across many years back called operability review. So this operational excellence, it's a monthly exercise or a quarterly exercise. Typically companies do reviewing a bunch of metrics. Most of them are stale or useless because they are already outdated, because you are doing after like a month or like quarter. So change has to happen at the all level, right? And this operational excellence has to start from like from the engineer to the VP, right? Or the exec. So try to be a catalyst and also impose change if your team is not following the SRE core principles. So that way you can bring in a lot of discipline to the structure and the approach. So those are the things I would say, at least in my opinion, are really important things for the SREs to start with.
I think one of the most important things is just being willing and able to learn new things, because nobody's born an SRE, right? You're not born with these skills. You have to acquire them somehow. And whether it's through, I don't know, like administrating your own Linux servers in your spare time or learning that through your professional life, it's just really important to be able to and willing to learn that. And SREs also tend to work with a wider range of technologies and languages than perhaps traditional software engineers do. Like, it's pretty unlikely that you'll work on one binary that's written in one language. You'll probably touch a lot of binaries in a lot of different languages, and you have to be able to adapt to dealing with that and being able to work with it. I also didn't really come from a kind of traditional sysadmin background. I did do my bachelor's degree in computer science, but I actually entered university as a like classical piano major. So it's just, you don't necessarily have to have developed those skills like when you're very, very young, but somewhere along the way, you should be willing and able to pick them up.
All right. So I think it's very fair to say that 10 years ago, if we were hiring proto SREs, that you'd want to look for some typical signs, slinging Linux boxes around in your spare time, having a computer science degree or whatever. But the reality is, and yes, I fit that profile, but it doesn't mean that I am necessarily the most successful archetype in SRE of today. Far from it. In fact, looking at how computing has changed over the years, right, you know, many of the SRE positions now are application-contained stacks within various cloud virtualization layers. So that abstracts away a lot of the lower-level thinking that you might need to do as far as problem-solving at that level, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't know it. It just means that you may have to think around the black box of your provider. So a couple of things. I look at, if you're looking, whether you're looking to hire a new grad or an industry experienced SRE, I'm looking for people who, having screened hundreds of resumes now, people who are good reverse engineers, not just engineers. Let me just say that again. I'm looking for people who are not only interested in how things work, but how they don't work, and breaking them down, and being critical and understanding and willing to smash open the alarm clock, if that's still a thing that we no longer have at our bedside, to figure out, smash open the Android or iPhone or whatever. I want people who can teach themselves things, absolutely, being flexible to understand the new things that are coming out that you will just simply not have experience in. SRE is about change, right? So we will obsolete ourselves every couple of years in our knowledge bases. I don't want people who are backwards thinkers. The phrase that my colleague Jen coined when we were talking a bit about SRE is, SREs are, I love this, stewards of the scientific method in a pressure cooker. Yes? So we want statistical and differential thinkers. And notice that none of that is about knowing about some libc call, right? It's great to have both high and low level knowledge, right? It's great to have a software engineering and or systems engineering and administration background. But if you can't apply that situationally, it doesn't count. So some interesting other indicators to think about.
A former boss of mine said that he's looking for SREs. He's looking for developers with massive OCD. So one of the things that I find really important is people who like to see the big picture. A old adage is jack of all trades, master of none. So people who take who can learn a lot of little things, but the depth on any one skill may not be there. To be frank, that is why we have developers, right? Developers learn have deep knowledge in a particular application. They have those deep skills. They're the ones that can take the time to debug all of the metrics that need to be done, et cetera. So, again, seeing the big picture, I think, is really important. And the other big one would be make decisions with data. It's good to have gut instincts. And like in the talk this morning, it just smelled like Redis. That happens to me frequently as well. But at the end of the day, data, your coworkers, your management, they will listen to data a lot more than they will listen to your gut feeling, no matter how many times your gut is right.
Great. Thanks, everyone. So the next question is, how do you know when an SRE is good at their job, or what makes a good SRE? So historically, from a sysadmin role, historically, SRE stemmed from the more traditional sysadmin role. And so for the senior SREs here, I would like you to mention what's more important now than it was before and what's less important now than it was before. Yeah. If you don't have anything to say, just pass it along.
Okay, so for me, so there are many things. I mean, most of the talks in this conf also touch a lot of good practices and good skills about a good SRE. But the one thing which will stand out, so thanks for mentioning that, finding the real root cause, right? So often we settle with addressing the symptoms, and people will be very happy the moment you mitigate the impact, and then everybody will disappear and things back to normal. But if there is an individual who wants to go deeper and has a thrust to find what actually happened, what is the real root cause? Because whatever you see at the application level, it's not going to be good enough unless you find the real root cause. So if an individual has the thrust to understand the real root cause and address the root cause, and he will become a great SRE, or he or she will become a great SRE. So, yeah.
So adding on to that point, internally, I've been told a saying, broken gets fixed, shoddy lasts forever. So a part of an SRE's job, I mean, so the mitigation part is obviously very important. You're the first line of defense against massive failures. But it's also really important to deal with prevention to make sure the same thing doesn't happen again. And to, as like Sarah mentioned, thoroughly root cause something and fix the problem so that the same thing doesn't happen again. So the same thing doesn't just bite you in the ass again.
So the opening comment was that SREs stem from system administration primarily or originally. Yes? I disagree. The actual history of the founding of SRE at Google, anyway, where they coined the term, was it came from software engineering and was peeled off. And so if you look at, there's this great talk that Ben Trainer gave called Keys to SRE, where he talks about kind of what they were looking for in the initial founding of this kind of community. And it was starting from software engineering and working your way towards operations and administration. And so coming at it with the E for engineering mindset of what can we automate, what can we simplify, what can we auto-manage up to a certain point. So I think that some of the most successful and important skills are being able to think about how you're going to software your way out of a problem, whether or not you come from a software background. In addition to my earlier comments about, you know, the scientific method and being able to kind of think about the decision tree of things that unfold in front of you during an outage and being able to prune and prioritize these sorts of things, right? I think people who have ruthless prioritization in what they're going to debug and diagnose, ruthless in favor of the users, in favor of the experience, are the ones that do the best. When it comes down to are we making the company money or not, that's great. But most importantly, it's are we doing right by our users? Anyone who puts that first, I think, is going to have a really good time.
Okay, I will probably date myself a little bit with some of my answer, but some of the technology that's relatively new is cloud computing, obviously, that when I started didn't really exist at all. A skill that I see a lot less these days. Granted, I'm at a startup, so take this with a grain of salt. The details of how Linux works, this doesn't really come up. There are more details about the huge variety of third parties we use. We outsource log aggregation, Sentry alerts, metrics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All these things are done by third parties. At LinkedIn, because of the scale, we wrote a lot of custom code. We don't have quite as much of that code, so there's a lot of wrangling of these third parties. One of the other big skills, especially as a startup, that's really important, it's really hard, especially for junior engineers, is the ability to say no. You have resource constraints. There's never enough time. There's never enough money to do all the things you would really love to do. You have to be able to prioritize. And you have to be able to tell somebody, no, I really cannot get to that, so that they can make the appropriate adjustments.
Great. Thanks, everyone. So the next question is, what can a new SRE do? What is the most important thing for a new SRE to do to bring themselves up to speed? And so normally when I ask this question to people, I get a lot of advice like of stuff you should do outside of work, fire up Linux systems, read textbooks, and stuff like that. So when you answer, I'd like you to consider, is it possible for somebody with additional life demands to ramp up as a new SRE? For example, what if you had an elderly parent that you're taking care of?
So for me, something that was really important for my onboarding was going through all the documentation that was originally in place because a lot of it was outdated. So going through that documentation, asking questions, and updating it as you go along is something that you can do on the job. Was another point I had, but
no worries. So the new SREs, what I will recommend to do is develop the skills that you need to run your day-to-day business. Okay, so the moment you get it, so the confidence level goes up, right? And then you will find a lot of time to do other things. So you need to know what is your business and try to understand what needed for you to run your day-to-day business. That's number one. The second thing is, of course, so watch the patterns, right? What alerts are coming in, what systems are generating alerts to understand the pattern. so that you can actually do a mind map, like all the alerts, all the noise that you have in the system. So that will be useful when you are going to have a conversation with your seniors, right? So that's the second thing. The third thing, of course, ask questions until you convince that you understood what is the system all about.
At the risk of sounding like a broken tape recorder, my advice is also to ask questions. So coming into like a relatively big company, I always had this like apprehension that if I asked the question, it would make me look really dumb. But the way I overcame that was just I figured that if I asked the same question, let's say 6 months later, I would look even more stupid because you're still asking the most elementary questions. So if you have a question, don't be afraid to ask it right now because it looks even worse if you ask it later. And the put-em-up documentation is really good. I remember coming into my team and asking my team mentor, so who keeps track of the nuclear documentation? Like, is there this one person that's devoted? And I was told, nope, that person is you now. You're responsible for updating it as you go because things change all the time. And you're, as a new person, you're going to have the most context on what's going to be relevant for the next person that comes along. And so coming back to asking questions, I think it's also really important to ask questions even though they're not necessarily directly related to the problem you need to solve right now, because just having context about a wider variety of things will be very important later. Like if there is, let's say, a traffic migration that's going on right now, it's not directly relevant to what you do, but maybe the next time you're on call, something will come up that's related to this. So that would help you be able to just find out the root cause, mitigate it much, much more quickly if you had just that passing context of having asked a question before.
Cool. So I get asked the question around, Andrew, how do I learn how to learn in SRE a lot? So forgive me if the following answer sounds a bit polished, but I mean every word of it. And the following is, many of you are going to hear my answer and go, you work at Google, it's a big company, so this couldn't possibly work for my 5-person SRE shop. It totally does. Check this out. You are part of a mesh, not a tree, when it comes to your responsibilities, your operational and knowledge responsibilities around the stacks that you maintain. There are other SREs around you, unless you are a shop of one, and there are other developers around you who are doing SRE-ish things in the absence of having a plethora of SREs. So there are other fellow kindred SRE-like people you will need to interact with. So how do you learn, and in what order do you learn, to make yourself the most utilizable and most useful to your fellow SRE kindred spirits? You don't start by doing the Carl Sagan approach of, in order to understand the universe, you must first understand how, et cetera, et cetera. If you start from fundamental principles, first I hit the keystroke on the computer and I get the OS keyboard interrupt, and you learn from all the way at the bottom to all the way at the top of your stack, that's going to take you forever. And quite frankly, with the rate of change of things that SRE are on call for and that liaise with, it's going to change entirely by the time you get to the top. The bottom will be obsolete. So my advice to you is, and to any for values of you of people who are learning SRE, is to start kind of in a plane where this spot here is your team. And you're going to kind of do concentric increasing circles of knowledge outwards from your team, because there are other SRE teams, this is the most hokey visual illustration I hope we're getting on the camera, that we can do, that are also having new people who are learning outwards. And so eventually you will intersect. And you will go past each other. You will learn a little bit about what the next team over from you does. Not at a major high depth sort of level, because ultimately the only way this system works is if you trust each other. Right? You will be on call at some point and need to page the team two teams to the left of you, or the other team two teams to the right of you, or up or down, or whatever, will need to talk to you, and you'll need to have a shared language. You'll need to be able to say, well, I had this incident, it came in through me, I started diagnosing it, it led kind of in the path towards your part of the woods. Here are the first couple of steps that I did to kind of debug and diagnose this problem, but now can you help me with it? And their answer should be, thanks, you've saved me a couple of minutes of work, we have a shared understanding, right? So don't start in the leftmost corner and learn how all of the other team's stuff works first. Start inwards and work your way out. That would be my advice. Now, to the question of managing, like, how can I learn to be a, sorry, water bottle collector? How can I learn to be an SRE, especially with other life obligations and important parts about you and how you interact at home as well as at work? First of all, look for an SRE opportunity where you get a lot of support and a lot of engagement. Say, a place that has an SRE dedicated education program. because just saying, you are an investment. You're like, they spend oodles and oodles and oodles of dollars to find the best SRE candidates. But what's the return on investment? How do you continue to invest in the candidate after they've started at the company, right? Reach out to your colleagues. Think about the cost of an interrupt to your colleagues. Let's go real low level for a second, right? This is actually me encouraging you to ask more questions, but from the nerd angle. What is the cost of an interrupt, of a disk seek, of an interrupt switch, right? Think about, find the senior SREs who are friendly and that want to show you how things work. Any SRE worth their salt, as I like to say, is obsessed with sublinear growth of humans relative to machines, right? So the punchline that you've probably heard me say before is, if you're a real SRE, you figure out how to scale the knowledge of the humans. That's the sublinear growth, right? How do you teach more in order to get even more out of the humans? So find the people who are already receptive to telling you everything about how SRE works, and find them at the right opportune moments. Interrupt them at the right times, at the end of meetings. Come to them with a list of questions. Prepare yourself. Batch up your questions. But it will more than pay dividends. So there you have it. I also think that because SREs are such a scarce resource and so hard to hire, that you need to have frank conversations with your benefits team at the company you are about to work for around, I understand that this is going to be an on-call position. How flexible are the shifts? What sort of benefits are available to me for family care, for elder care, for what the whole breadth of, see, there I go, knocking the water over, right? The whole breadth of opportunities. How are you, company that I'm about to be hired by, going to help me be the best SRE I can be for you?
So I will echo some of that as well, both Andrew and Rita, about learning about other teams. The first thing I would do is learning the tools. There's nothing worse than being paged at 3 o'clock in the morning and you don't know how to use your log tool, your metrics tool, or whatever. So learn the tools. Every infrastructure has their pros and cons. Learn the basics so that when you need them, you're not tripping over them. Learn your deployment. Learn your configuration management, even if it means doing a no-op deployment or a no-op config change. Learn the quirks of those tools. They all have quirks. As much as we want to get rid of them, the quirks do exist. And then next would be learn the organizational structure. Learn about the other engineering teams. Learn about the entire organization as a whole, at least at a very basic level. At some point, you will interface with those other teams. And I'm talking about even simple things like accounting, right? You will have to pay bills. Knowing who to talk to and... knowing who to talk to really helps in a real critical situation. Also, learn how your developers develop. You know, do they have specific IDEs? Are there quirks about how they develop? For example, in my startup, we're a big AWS shop. And while I would love everybody to use the virtual machines, they prefer Vagrant. That's just how they want to work. So learn how they develop, so that you can adapt your processes and tools to how they really want to work. Granted, over time, the two can merge, but accept reality as it is and try and deal with it. Lastly, as far as outside of work, while it would be great if, quote, every SRE spent all their free time doing Linux bring-ups and dealing with Pixie booting and all kinds of more esoteric stuff, the fact is that your diverse background helps bring a new sense of creativity to problems. So don't think that you have to learn all about the new tech. You have to spend all your time worrying about Docker or worrying about GCE versus AWS. The fact is, learning how to play the piano, learning how to draw, that activates different parts of your brain, and bringing that creativity to critical situations is just as important as the details of Docker or AWS.
Katie, did you have something to add?
Oh, I was looking at my next point. No, I think it was said by Andrew.
Okay, perfect. So the next question is, what is the most important thing that an SRE trainer can do to help bring a new SRE up to speed? And so we have a lot of SREs from different backgrounds over here. And so I'd like you to consider what requirements are there for coding and systems knowledge for new SREs coming in.
So for me, coming in with very little programming experience, it was very useful for me to shadow someone at first, just kind of pick their brain as they're doing their job, because they have to slow down and kind of explain things along the way, which they don't often do. And then pair programming as well, so having someone over your shoulder as you're doing it. I find really useful to be doing the things on my computer so I can go at my pace and learn effectively that way.
So training SREs plays a very important role, right? So many companies or many organizations will have their own set of training programs. So we call boot camp, and like I think Google, it's different. So what actually really matters when the training is happening, so is it actually yielding the result that it's supposed to be, right? So many times we like have them sit in a room, talk about a bunch of technologies, like packed sessions, back-to-back training programs. At the end of the day, what they really learned is also important. So what I followed, it worked out really well in the past. Also now, I was mentioning to a few other people yesterday, is like make them come and present the technology that you use, right? So that way, they actually go back and read about the technology. They come prepared if they ask any very critical questions about that platform or the technology, right? So that way, they will be more equipped and experienced already in the technology by doing that. So that's one of the important things that I'm following, which is working really well. The other thing is make them use your product, right? If they don't know about your product, they are not going to add any value to it. So I ran a program called KYP, it's Know Your Product. So basically, like you use the product as your user or your customer, and you understand the pain points of the product, and it not only help in terms of the roadmap for the product, also when it fails, you know where the customer will be impacted if the service is down. So that way they can add more value even when they are on call. Without that, they are just going to be like an operator which start bunch of services without even knowing whether this will fix the user impact or not.
So I won't speak too much to the formalized training because Andrew's been running this thing for the past I don't know how many years, and I've only been through one instance of that whole training program for like a week. So he's probably more qualified to speak to that. But I think there's other things that are outside of kind of structural education that I think is really important, like teaching some of the soft parts, not just the technical parts, like how to work with a distributed team. I've never really worked with a distributed team before coming to Google, and I didn't quite grasp the subtleties, the really obvious subtleties, like maybe you shouldn't ping that team in Europe when it's 2 p.m. your time because it's going to be like midnight for them or like 10 p.m. So these things, I don't know if they're easy to cover in a like structured educational context, but your team mentors should probably tell you how to best interact with other SREs. I think it's also really important to for trainers to kind of walk you through the things that might have a like a big impact on production that you're scared to do, because so you know that it's possible to roll back your system, but it's also important to build up that confidence that to know that hey, I've done this once before. The next time this happens, something bad happens on call, I know I'm able to roll it back. So psychological safety, I think, is also really important to build so that you're able to respond and mitigate incidents quickly.
No shortage of opinions here. In fact, I have about an hour's worth of highly caffeinated opinions that many of you may have seen if you came to my talk 2 years ago in this very place at SREcon, a class called Accelerating SREs to On-Call and Beyond, How to Strap a Jetpack to Your Newbies While Still Keeping Your Senior SRE Up to Speed. If you are even at least vaguely interested in where I'm going with that, you can watch the video, or it became the basis for Chapter 28 in the Google SRE book, or the title of the same name. I'll just go ahead and shamelessly plug, but seriously, this whole chapter is basically an answer to this question. It has like 10 different recipes for what we think are best practices around SRE teams, large and small, training and bootstrapping their own. If you go to google.com/SRE, if you were to happen to do that, and you were to happen to click on Read SRE Book and then search for 28, you're there. Yes? Yes? Okay. Awesome.
When I was at LinkedIn, we tried a couple of strategies to try to both educate people coming in and keep people up to date. I had mixed success at best. One of the big challenges is if you are currently an SRE, if you're new, this is a little bit different, but if you are currently an SRE, trying to find the time to learn a new technology, even in a structured program, can be difficult. It is always easier to, it is usually easier to just say, oh, let me just finish this one thing and I will get to that later. Oh, they recorded a video, I will just watch it later, and later never happens. So taking the time, that is a combination of you showing initiative as an SRE and your management making a priority. Other than that, I think as a trainer, my team is currently three, including me. Both of my other teammates are former interns of mine. So they're both very young. There are a couple of things. One, patience. They are young. They will make mistakes, but they are energetic, and it's awesome. But you need to show patience, and you need to allow them to fail. It is very difficult, having been in their situation before. I was an intern multiple times back when I was doing chemistry stuff, and they will make mistakes. It is hard to just sit back, even though you see they are about to make a mistake, and just let them make that mistake. But it is important that they be allowed to make mistakes without obviously destroying the company. In the startup, that is very possible. So you know, keep it controlled, but patience, and allow your new SREs to gently fail.
Cool. So I have one more question for the panel, and then we'll open it up for audience questions. And then at the end, I'll try to come up with some sort of summary of best practices for training new SREs. So prepare your audience questions while people are talking. So the last question is that there is a lot of team factors that affect how quickly a new SRE can be trained up. Some teammates are more willing or less willing to take on mentorship responsibilities. There are also cultural variances, practices around documentation, escalation on call, and postmortems can vary between teams. So the next question is, what is the most important thing for teammates of a new SRE to do? And in adding to your question, is there anything that managers or teammates should be obligated to do to train up a new SRE?
So I think something that's really important for training new SRE is asking leading questions. So instead of just telling them the answer straight out, if you help them guide them to the answer, it's a lot more valuable and they'll retain the knowledge better. Another thing is that don't assume that they know the jargon that you're talking about. All these acronyms that you throw at, you know, they might understand what that means. You know, they might not understand the newest technology that you're using. They might not understand, you know, the different systems and microservices that you use. So taking a minute to explain those and ask if they're understanding everything, like just checking in and saying, like, does that all make sense, is a great way to gauge what their knowledge and their understanding is. If they're not asking questions or then that means that it's either too hard or too easy, and you need to figure out which one that is.
Thank you, Katie. So being a manager, so I can keep talking about this for next 1 hour, but I just try to restrict like a couple of points. Like Katie mentioned, so team plays a very important role for a successful SRE. In fact, like as a team, we can deliver more if everybody on the same page. So in that front, ready to give feedback, okay? So feedback is very, very important because they will be waiting for your feedback. So it's not that they will come and ask you, because it's your responsibility to give the feedback. On the same time, be ready to take the feedback as well, because many times I noticed the new hires have more fresh and new ideas. So the senior people should be able to take those feedback and implement in the system, because they are so used to the system, they might not see the gaps. Right, it's good to get feedback on both ways. So when you do this, you will also develop a culture called like giving them the trust and empowerment. Because often people wait for the seniors to direct them. Right, so this is going to be a very bad situation when they have to like resolve a problem, and if they are waiting for directions from seniors, so that will exponentially increase your mean time to recover. Right. If they have that confidence, they can take decisions. So like Craig mentioned, they will make mistakes. They will learn by making those mistakes. If you don't give them the chance, they are never going to learn and never going to get the confidence. Also, when you give So be warned when you give them the task. In fact, I will recommend don't give them the task. Give them problems, right? And also give them possible solutions, right? You talk to them and guide them through. So why you will choose one versus other? So with all the other solutions, right? So these are the things will help them to understand the bigger picture so that they can be more efficient and influencing over a period of time. Because like I mentioned, team plays a very important role in grooming a new SREs.
I think an important thing for teammates to do is to default to over-explaining rather than under-explaining, because as a new person, it is far easier for me to say, hey, I already knew that. You can skim over it rather than, I don't know what you're talking about. Please back up like 20 steps and explain it all in greater detail. So just that way you can make sure that all the information your new SRE needs is transmitted and it's not held back because they're too shy to ask or because they figure like they should already know this and it's not worth your time to explain it to them. I've had two different teammates explain how to a new technology to me, basically how to roll out a change separated by clusters while doing canarying. And so one teammate explained to me, just basically name drop the tool and says, you can go use it. And I did eventually learn how to use it, but I had the same explanation given to me the second time by doing a actual example rollout of using this tool. This person explained to me exactly what the different buttons do and whether you should choose these configurations. And even though I had already done it once by myself, there were a couple other details that were revealed to me when the second person explained it much more thoroughly. So yeah, always opt to over-explain rather than under-explain.
I think it's a real good diagnostic question when you have a new person who joins your team to ask their manager, unless of course you are their manager, or ask their mentor, what's the learning plan going to be for this person? Now, if learning and plan together sound like something that working for the corporate man would do, it's not fair. It's a really important thing. This can be as simple as, we're going to make sure that they get a tour through the call flow of the stack. We're going to make sure that we have a series of comprehension questions that are not meant to be stump the chump type questions, meant for your senior people to feel somehow superior to your junior SRE. Not at all. These should be things that allow both your newest SRE and your senior most SRE to gain mutual confidence in the knowledge that the junior SRE has gained. Ultimately, this person is going to be on call in the same trenches as you are. And you'll need to learn to be able to let go and detach and have the trust and faith that they are as capable, if not more, and different than you are at solving these problems. So I have a whole list of recipes of things that are great examples of things you can do to pitch in with one nth of your time to help with your newest SREs. But the punchline is, training up your newest SREs is actually equally valuable for all of your senior SREs. Because it's an excuse to kind of revisit things through fresh eyes. It's an excuse to ask fundamental comprehension questions like, but why? And to call BS on system designs through the eyes of the newest person. So here are two fun examples of things you can do. And for more, read the book chapter. So one, we have a great exercise we do at Google called a reverse engineering a production service. And in this tour that we do, we take we come up with this fictitious world where the Google News SRE and SWE teams went on a tour of the Bermuda Triangle and got lost and never came back. And so now you are the Google News SRE and SWE teams. And we take you through how to reverse engineer the front-end layers and the back-end layers and all of the different debugging and diagnostic parts so that you can draw together a picture of Google News. Occasionally, the Google News SWE team actually sends their newest person to the class as an elaborate practical joke, and they appreciate it too. But being able to effectively sing the song of your people to your newest person is really important. And then the second example is in web search, we have a fun little exercise we put together called how to burn a search cluster to the ground. And this is an interesting one that everyone, not just the newest person, particularly appreciates. What we do is we take, because of the miracle of over-provisioning, I'm sorry, I mean defense in depth, throwing money at the problem, we have the luxury of being able to take one of our copies of our stack out of service halfway around the world where most people are sleeping, and fire it up under synthetic load. And then rather than doing maybe perhaps the most obvious disaster scenarios of let's see what happens when we give it 200% of traffic or this or that, what we actually do is numerator and denominator, right? We start shooting tasks in the system. We reduce the denominator. So at standard load that your standard users are providing, what happens if we shoot the caching layer? What happens if we introduce certain bottlenecks? And we pose the question to both our newest and our oldest by tenure SREs. And inevitably and consistently, everyone gets things wrong. Their hypotheses are questioned. One of the largest sources of my personal bugs filed against the search stack at Google comes from this exercise, rather than from my day-to-day operational stuff. Because what's really interesting is being able to say, what do I think would happen if I lit a match and tossed it? Is really insightful for everyone, especially because then even the most senior blustery people who say, well, clearly this thing would happen over here, oh, what's happening here? They then have to justify it as well. And we learn from how the rest of us learn. Those are but two things of a long list of suggestions I have for everyone. And think about how you could do an exercise like that with your stack in your environment.
So first, I would echo the comment by Kitty, and that's jargon. Jargon is really painful when you join a new company. I've only been in the startup now a couple of years, and they threw out a lot of jargon. I have been doing SRE type work for quite a while, and they threw out jargon I had never heard before because the technology stack is different. So, jargon, be patient with questions. So I will echo the patience thing again. Be patient with new people that come in, even with a lot of experience, if they come from a different background. The assumptions that they have made in the past may or may not be valid. Be able to answer questions. We use Slack, whatever means you use team meetings, whatever. Be there to answer questions by your new people. And then lastly, communication. Communication is really, really important. Engage with the new employees. It can be overwhelming when you are new, and you don't want them to just silently fail. If they're not asking questions, engage with them. Communication goes both ways. If they're not engaging, it is possible that they are completely overwhelmed. They don't even know what to ask. So reach out to them and just kind of touch base, see how you're doing, et cetera.
So just to add one point, like Andrew mentioned, so many times if they try on their own, so they will learn faster. So like the fire drill or the mock drill of the past events, and like give them the situation, ask them to lead the situation and see how they react to the situation, and like let them know the mistakes they made or the decisions they took or the good things they did is actually going to stay in their mind for a very long time. So in Yahoo, we try this called fire drill, like very frequently. It could be like simple enough, like saying failover from one cluster to another cluster to take down the entire service, like he said, and see what is actually happening to the system. And this is actually a bunch of new SREs will be trying everything, and the senior SREs or the managers will be just sitting and guiding them throughout the process. In fact, they will be executing the commands provided by the new SREs. So it worked out really well.
I have something else to add. Also, sharing war stories with new SREs is a very effective tactic to make them comfortable, because I remember hearing some severe stories of like, oh, we took down the whole system. And I'm like, wow, that's a thing that you can do? Like, sure. And they're like, if it happens to you, it's fine. We'll deal with it. So that's like really comforting for a new SRE person.
Great. So we have time now for audience questions. There's a mic over there. If anyone has any questions, come on up.
Hi, Peter Sahlstrom, MailChimp. I was wondering what y'all do, if anything, to try to proactively train SREs before they join the SRE team, like in terms of establishing a pipeline of possible candidates, and especially if you do anything even outside your company in the community to try to get people to think there's more than just going into software development, but also how do I think of this overall systems mindset? How do we get kids coming out of high school and going into SRE? Thank you.
Thanks for your question.
So yeah, this is a good question, right? Any company will face this challenge of hiring new SREs has to have some strategy in place to like attract that crowd that you can bring in or groom or train as new SRE. So what we do in Yahoo is actually they have this internship program where new college grads will come and do projects. And we give a project which actually varies from all the software development to all the SRE kind of a projects, right? So from that project, the way in which they approach the problem, the way in which they solve that problem, so we know, okay, so this candidate is actually a good SRE candidate if we hire him as an SRE in the future. And also we have this constant programs of going and attending some of these schools where we find the top talents doing research and projects. And we know, okay, so that college traditionally has this background of grooming more new SREs, and we try to reach out to them whenever we can.
I go out to a lot of different college campuses and I give talks about SRE. And an interesting thing, I'm not going to be able to answer this at the high school level to the original question, but at the collegiate level, new grads don't yet have the industry experience of having the nasty ops versus dev divide. So we don't have to re-educate around things like, don't worry, you're not having developers throwing things at you, ha-ha. Right? That problem is an industry problem. But on the new grad side, it's, how's this going to make an impact on the world? I'm glad that new grads are asking that sort of question. Why is this any more interesting to me than a software engineering position, whether it be front-endy or back-endy or some sort of thing? And so what we have here as an interesting recruiting and story device is, well, war stories, right? That's certainly an interesting way of saying for people who have a kind of a flair for being more investigatory, for people who want to help save the ship, right? You know, rather than being the actor on the stage, you are the person with the headset in the back, right, looking at our sound guy, right? Like, the SREs are the sound guys, if you will, of the whole kind of dramatic performance. So you look for those sorts of folks, you explain that we're different in this regard, right? I think that is a way of getting the message out.
And to add to that, I think anybody who takes an interest in it within your own team, just directing them to, say, any Slack channels that SRE are in, just looking at the kind of conversations that they have is a really effective way to get them engaged and understand what that team does and why it's important.
Does anyone else have anything to add? All right, next question.
Hi, Preetha from Indeed. Sort of a related question to the previous one. Like everybody else here today, we're also trying to grow and hire SREs, and hiring is difficult. We do have a lot of engineers in product teams, so do you all have any tips about how to entice software engineers to consider like an internal transfer and so on? The on-call aspect seems to scare everybody, and you know, whatever advice you might have in that regard is useful.
All right, so we found that some of the most interesting SRE candidates that we've attained have come from within our own engineering, software engineering organization. So we actually, in a fit of creativity that I wouldn't have ascribed to SREs, we had kind of a highly marketable sort of device that we did about 10 years ago now called Mission Control, which is a rotation program we have at Google for high-performing software engineers who can rotate into site reliability engineering. Now, it's pitched as a catch-and-release program. We bring in some SWEs, we beat them with the clue bat of production awesomeness, and then they go back and they, you know, fight for their stacks in the rest of the world, and we know that everything is going to be okay. But the dirty secret is it's not a catch-and-release program. It's a catch-and-stay program. It turns out that about 55 to 60% of the people who go through Mission Control say, this is amazing, can I stay? And then we go, yeah, we kind of planned for it. Ha ha. So, and you know, there's cheesy things we do along with it, like the whole, like the homage to the actual super badass Mission Control program, right? So with respect to our colleagues in aeronautics and space, we kind of talk it up as a well-storied, like, this is a brave thing for you to go try, as opposed to, like, want to come ack pages on a pager, which is totally false. Like, so we talk it up a little bit. We have a high bar for meeting it, accordingly, the people who self-select in are ones who are looking for an adventure, right? And consistently, the people who said, this has been way more fun, or way more interesting, or way deeper, or way something more than what I was doing in the general engineering populace. And again, the, you know, 45% of people that go back still take a lot of clue bat with them. So consider something like that.
So this is more of a change the culture kind of thing, which I realize can be extremely difficult. So take this with a grain of salt. But my first thought was, if your devs are scared because of on-call, why aren't your devs on-call? So maybe change that first. Next is, you have to remember what SRE is. SRE is an implementation of the DevOps paradigm. And DevOps is a spectrum. It isn't like you're either doing DevOps or not. You can do pieces, you can do parts, you can do it in, you know, more and less. So one thought would be, if you can do it with a team that's a little bit more interested, maybe that team can be a little bit more engaged with their build and deploy, with their config management, et cetera. So you can encourage that one team, and maybe that encourages other people. I don't know how much you can swap people from different teams, but if that one team is more globally SRE, then maybe others will want to be part of that team, and that kind of encourages SRE throughout the organization.
Something that I have to add is that having your SREs explain what they're really excited about in their field is a really effective way to gather interest. Something that we do in our organization is we have eng talks during lunch hour every few weeks. And there are different topics about tooling that we have and things that people are really excited about. And we get to share with the organization what we do, because everybody just kind of knows that we keep the site running and they don't really know what else we do. So it's a nice place for us to shine.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Next question.
I'm Jeff from Medallia. So along the lines of war stories, I'm kind of curious, what do you do when your new SRE makes their first really big mistake and they mess up?
You congratulate them.
So it will happen, right? So that's the truth. So you cannot hide behind the truth that nobody will make a mistake. So then you are not actually going to go anywhere, right, if you don't give them the chance. So when they make a mistake, it's very important not talk about that mistake when it is actually happening, right? So that time the focus should be actually resolving the user impact or restoring the service. And of course, everybody will have this big postmortem meeting that talk about what went wrong, how we can prevent this, and so on. So, but at the end of the day, you should ask the person who made the mistake what is actually really learned from that mistake, right? So how he can relate if he has to do a similar execution or a decision later in his life, right? If the person comes back with, like, say, 3-4 things that I will do this, and you go back and think whether these things make sense, because he's going to be new, he will not have that experience you have, right? And you guide them saying that if you do this, you might do the same mistake again, instead of that, why don't you try this? So try it in one host, like I just giving an example, before executing to 100 machines. Or if you're running a batch job, so today morning we had a call which forces the argument taking down the entire service. It happens. It happens all the time. So try to check those things, right? Try to revisit your tools, the model that you have to allow people to make a big mistake. Try to put mitigations around it. So that's a way you can help that person, rather than blaming that person is not going to help anyway.
My advice is to socialize the idea of failure as much as possible. I tell people my story of my largest failure. When I have lunches with new SREs, I bring in senior SREs, and I have every single person introduce themselves by saying, what is the biggest thing they've screwed up at the company? Right? It's a badge of honor. And for the record, my teammates went to the U.S. Treasury Department, where for the mere cost of $100, you can buy a shredded, decirculated $100,000 in a clear plastic bag. And they gave it to me when I had my first outage, and they just put a post-it note on it with the cluster that I had accidentally downed, causing really bad retries at the reverse proxy. So celebrate it, right? Don't worry, welcome to the club. You are a real name of your company, or if you at least have a six-figure outage or a four-figure outage or whatever the case may be. But it's good job. What are you going to do to learn from this? What are we going to do to learn about the mistake that happened upon you? So.
Yeah, I would echo a lot of that. So first of all, do you have blameless postmortems? Do you all get together and just say, okay, look, what happened? it is rarely a single event that leads to it. It is usually a collection of things, a collection of misunderstood flags. You know, the Dash V thing this morning was awesome. So getting everybody in a room to say, yeah, you know what, I could have done this tool better that would have prevented this mistake. Or, you know what, I could have handled the downstream having latencies that are 3x. I could have done that better. So you get a bunch of people in the room with, again, blameless postmortems, and they all accept that a lot of things led to it. Yeah, one person might have been the one that flipped the wrong switch, but there are many things usually that could be done better to have prevented the entire downtime.
To add on to just the socializing aspect of failure, we do a weekly event. It's called Ops Review, where the SREs in an office get together and just have a drink, whatever, and they talk about the failures that have happened that week. And there's basically one golden rule to that event. You can only talk about an incident you were involved in. So this way, it kind of it perpetuates a culture of learning from what's gone wrong. And it, well, I mean, you're not blaming somebody else because it was you that was involved in the incident, right? So that's like a safe way to talk about what went wrong and how we can prevent it from happening again.
Hi, my name is Yun. I'm from Lawrenceburg National Lab. And I have a question about, I guess, teams that are still transitioning from operations to being SRE teams, and especially smaller teams, and teams that are still developing and deploying their automation tools, so that there is kind of a fair amount of labor-intensive things that you still have to do. So when hiring a new SRE into a team like that, into a smaller team, it is sometimes important to kind of transition them quickly to be ready for on-call and to be ready to work shifts. But being an SRE is a high responsibility job. We talked about screw-ups. You can screw up pretty big. So how do you know when people are ready, and how do you encourage them when you think they're ready? But they never think they're ready, because learning is, you can learn forever, right? So how do you encourage them to take that responsibility, and how do you know when they're ready to take that responsibility?
It's a great question. So because some of the bigger organizations always have this advantage of having a dedicated team or like set up teams who can develop tools, who can build automation and stuff like that. It's very difficult for a smaller organization where you have to already take care of your existing fires. At the same time, you need to build automation so that your life is simple, right? So what I recommend, right, not knowing all the details, is basically show them what these automations can bring in, right? And the moment you show them the value of these automations, they will find their own time. And it has to be an open conversation with your product teams as well, right? And like somebody mentioned, we have to ruthlessly prioritize even the fires that we have. So if we have 100 fires, of course, you cannot resolve all of them at the same time. And try to find out all the low-hanging fruits that you can achieve, which will give you some breather in terms of getting this automation done. And if you have a product which is creating a bigger noise, you sit with the engineering leads of those products and say that, you know what, next 1 month, we are not going to do anything unless we fix these operational issues, right? At the end of the day, these operational issues actually impacting your users, impacting your customers in terms of availability, in terms of like bad user experience, so on, right? So it's like, again, back to this cultural change has to happen at all levels. I've talked about earlier at all the times. That's the only way you can actually making progress. And the moment you make progress, you will see the value, how the entire organization will start contributing to this sprint.
I would argue that there is no good time. Just like the talk this morning where they talked about when an outage happens, you want to be staring at it. You don't want it to happen at 3 o'clock in the morning, your first outage. So much like computers have problems, people have problems. People's kids get sick. You get sick. You go on vacation. You don't want them to be in a situation when you're not around. So unfortunately, and I'm at a startup with a young team, you kind of have to force the issue. It sucks, but at least you're there, you can be supportive, and you can help deal with anything majorly wrong. If they have to do that while you're gone or not available, they can take it pretty hard. So fortunately, that hasn't happened with me. Yeah, I would argue that there really isn't a good time. And just, again, like this morning, if you're staring at it, you can help them. So I would encourage you to force it.
Something that I have to add is, I was talking earlier about shadowing and pair programming. So that's a really effective tool as well for being on call. When I first started my on-call shifts, I was not comfortable doing that by myself. I didn't have the training to do that. And so I was put on call with another SRE person. And I just kind of watched them manage the fires for a little bit. And then slowly I took over and I started managing the fires until I was left to manage them by myself. But when I was left to manage them by myself, I was told who I could contact when I need help. And having those contacts is really helpful. Except don't just give them one contact, like your most advanced systems person. Be like, oh yeah, just contact Gordon. Well, Gordon's offline or asleep right now. Like, we're having a fire and I don't know who to contact. Like, having an effective escalation policy is a really great tool.
Next question.
Hey, so Tom Zumsteg, I've been with LinkedIn since October, and thank you so much for putting this on. It's great to hear from the managers and to see, oh my gosh, that's what they were trying to tell me, but in different words, and it's great to hear from the new people. It helps break imposter syndrome and go, oh my gosh, I saw exactly that and felt exactly that, and I wish I'd done that. So we've been talking about new SREs, and as a new SRE, when do you get to say, I'm an SRE, not a new SRE? And what markers do you look for as a manager to say, okay, this guy's no longer new? I mean, is it your first on-call rotation? Is it your first screw-up? Is it your first big win?
Yes, yes, yes. All of these things. Absolutely. You can hang your hat. Hats are required. No, just kidding. You can hang your hat on any number of milestones, whether it's your first, the first screw-up, whether it's the first excellent post-mortem that you write that you've learned something, whether it's when you are willing to turn around and teach to someone else who's just slightly newer than you what you've learned. All of these things together are healthy. Not all of them necessarily need to happen in any sort of prescribed order. Really, I think the phrase that those that teach it know it, I think epitomizes things. Not everyone is all about, let me go speak in front of a billion people. Even if it's just, hey, newest person, I see that you were confused about this caching layer over here. Oh, wait, I know stuff about the caching layer. Well, crap, you know?
So you start teaching it back to people, and then you're not new anymore here.
Yes, and also just hire one more person after you, and then you get them to refer another person. It's fine. Then you're no longer the newest one.
Yeah, you'll hear a lot of people talk about their first outage or, you know, whatever. Actually, I would argue that day one, the pressure of being an SRE is enough to say that you're an SRE, right? Just being a member of that team is actually good enough.
So from the flip side, I think you're always new at something. Even if you've been at the company for 10 years, you cannot possibly know everything about the system. So in a way, you're always new at something.
Next question.
Jeremy from LendingTree. A lot of times we talk about don't let the little hack you did become the production, you know, thing that you put into production or that you want to do the best you can. But oftentimes we find that business simply will not allow us to have the resources that we need, or our partners won't provide the services or the level of, you know, SLA that we need to ensure that our systems are, you know, bulletproof. How do you teach new SREs that sometimes the hack is all you get, or that what you have is something that you're just going to have to ride around because that's what business has given you?
So as I mentioned, we are a big AWS shop, which given recent events should Just incite laughter right there. So we actually had a mitigation plan, and it was pushed back on for budgets, time, blah, blah, blah. There's lots of reasons. So one thing would be just shared experience. Sometimes you just have to say, yeah, this is the one where you can just let this hack live in production. But you don't know until the incident happens.
So I'm going to presume a bunch of things about your question. Sorry, this is being unfair. I'm talking about kind of a general class of issues. I think a part of your question is around how do you instill the right set of values in the new SRE so they know when to speak up and what fires to fight and which hills to die on or not die on. So ruthless prioritization, again, one of my favorite phrases, or in the case of people named Ruth, Ruth prioritization. But that is what it all comes down to, because if what you have is a little hack somewhere that never really inflames itself, is never anywhere listed in your postmortems, then maybe that's okay, because maybe everyone has looked past that issue and it's all about speed, it's all about reliability, whatever else has blown past that. If, however, you are in a situation where there is something that's constantly coming up in postmortems, our next action should be to make sure that we mitigate this risk. Oh, wait, we just got paged for the same thing again, and it's not changing, and you're not getting the support around you to be able to improve that. That is where you want to start dying on various hills. Ultimately, because again, SREs are a scarce resource, we provide more and different value than software engineers in the aggregate, in a different sort of way. If we're not allowed to make the improvements that we're suggesting, or if other people around us are not willing to collaborate to implement those mitigations, then it's not working. And it, in the strongest of senses, it may not even be an SRE shop at that point, if the trust is broken and the leverage and power isn't there. Something that I always recommend is that, you know, for organizations of size larger than 5 or 10, that you have a different manager or VP, if you're that large and flowery enough, for general engineering efforts, and a different director, manager, or VP of SRE, so that your incentives are slightly different and so that escalations can occur at that level and you have someone who has your back. I'm reading a whole lot more past maybe what you're suggesting, but I want to get it out there for everyone that the things that are most important for SRE need to be able to happen for the safety of the users and the products and the developers around them. So.
Yeah, just to reflect what Andrew said. So I was mentioning him this yesterday. If it is not working out, you change the manager. So that's what I did. I started reporting to the product VP so that I can influence his product by creating enough visibility around all the operational excellence, right? So what I recommend to you in your case, so make your new SREs be vocal, so that they can attend their stand-ups or whatever forums that you have, and create enough awareness around all the fires, all the issues that your team has been facing. So one thing which worked out really well for me, attending those daily stand-ups and talking about those all the fires on a day-to-day basis, make all the engineers aware, because the engineers will be willing to contribute more because his fellow engineer is suffering, right? So then it's a bottoms up, and it's a chain reaction. If one person start addressing, or even if he writes a code thinking that my fellow engineer will suffer if I write a bad code, so that is actually a good thing which will create enough ripple effect and will start seeing more impact around that. So yeah, so there are many recommendations. You try what is that it is actually needed at this point of time that you can make sure your engineers are not like taking the burden all the time.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Nick Wood from UpGuard. I think this question might have been asked in a different context already, but do you have any tips on managing and growing a very small team and also making that transition to a larger team? It might be a little too general, but.
So when I started, so I had like 4 people in my team. So I faced the same challenge. We have to like take on call, we have to do deployments. This is like I'm talking about 10 years back. And so there is no CACD and everything, right? So almost all the problems a typical SRE will face, we had. So what we did over a period of time, so you identify the investments that you want to make. So you need to have a like forward-looking strategy, right? Without that, we cannot like make any progress. So you can be very tactical in nature. Unfortunately, being an SRE, you will end up doing that, right? So you take a step back and see, okay, so if I have to do this deployment 6 months down the line, will I do the same thing, right? If I don't make the change now, then I will be doing the same thing after 6 months. That is not going to help me. That is not going to help my team. So what are the investments I will make now so that I will not do the same thing after 6 months? So you take that into your planning or roadmap discussion with your leadership team or whoever it is, and start making slow progress, right? And like I mentioned earlier, right. So there will be 100 things to do, and if you get distracted, you will not get anything done. So try to invest in the areas that will give you the short-term benefit versus the long-term benefit, and make sure that you make a progress. You have a check and balance so that you know, okay, so we are going in the right direction until you achieve. The problem you face when the team grows, so I manage global teams, right? And everybody should be at the same level, otherwise it's going to be tough. And there will be always some ops work, you have to do it. So you identify an individual who will be very good at doing those ops work, and they will repeatedly do that work. And you also try to coach them, make them aware. So that's not the direction that we are going. So we are in this automation, like even monitoring is a code, right? So you can write 100 monitoring. If you don't think that as a code, you will be, you will not be very efficient in writing those monitoring. So coach them so that the people that who are traditionally doing ops work also embraces and leverages all the SRE core principles. And you need to have like isolations within the product, not within your team. So you mean what I say, right? Yeah. So you can have like a very critical product. Also, you can have a less critical product. But the principles is going to be the same. So that when you have a rotation, when people move around, when people move from different products to other product, so they will follow the same principles. Otherwise, they will have the laid-back approach because they are supporting a product which is not that sensitive.
Right. Okay.
So the first thing I would do is make sure your management understands what you do. And depending on the size of your company, my size, the CEO really has to understand what I do and the value that you add. The other thing that I have done is I create a lot of JIRA tickets. And what this does is it shows the backlog, and it shows how much other things you could be doing to free up developers' time. And one of the issues is that I've heard is the transition. Right, so how do you transition into more and more SRE if you're always backlogged? Lean on the developers. Again, DevOps is a spectrum. It's not on or off. So if the developers can help you with some things, that would be great. In my experience, they are generally under as much pressure for product deliverables, so that may or may not work, but that's what I've tried to do.
One other note here, and that is you can't just turn a switch and hire 5 SRE all at once, but having a buddy is so important. If you are the lone SRE who's going to be doing it by oneself for a long time, you are more likely to be ganged up on or outcast or misunderstood as that person that we throw things to, and we're right back at ops. So having the buy-in, and the other thing too is I think peeling off one or two production-curious software engineers to help seed the team, because let's face it, the tribal judgmentalism that we have in many engineering companies means that if you start with a bunch of people from the outside, they're not us. But if you get the person who has some cred, but who is also flexible and wants to help with the weirding ways of production, then one or two of those folks in a team of 5, it adds an extra layer of legitimacy, but also the ability to translate your production concepts into how do the other developers do this right now, and also empathy. How do folks do a release right now? Oh, we can make that better for them, etc.
Okay, so
Thank you.
Within the last couple minutes, I noticed we have 2 people who still want to ask questions. I don't know if you two want to talk between yourselves and decide which question is better to ask. So I think just to quickly summarize what we've talked about. So the best practices for finding new SREs, you want people that are willing to automate, that are curious, that want to know what's going on and find the root cause, and people who ask questions. For new SREs, the best things to do is to learn about, build, deploy your company's tools, and also to ask questions. And for SRE trainers, the advice that we've gotten is to provide feedback, guidance, opportunities to practice and fail, as well as documentation, to be blameless, to be patient, and also to have a good company culture that will foster new SREs. And we had one more question.
Yeah, sure. So my name's Tyler Stewart. I'm from the Home Depot. So real quick, in the essence of time, we talked about training new SREs, and it's a lot of really great information. I work primarily on .com, where we have an SRE organization, but we're looking to take SRE and move it to our entire enterprise. So speaking specifically kind of to that point, how can you bootstrap, say, entire SRE teams as opposed to just new individual SREs?
I think, first of all, I'm really glad that you're working with our customer reliability engineers to help with this very question. I think it's important to have people do the pre-work of understanding what the benefit of SRE is, talking it up, socializing the idea of what the benefit will provide, getting people excited about it, finding people who want to self-select into it, right? Not press-ganging folks or making a not-so-volunteer army out of people, or again, bringing people in from the outside. I think the people who do well at this will want to do this, will see the benefit. And I think also going through case studies, whether you use examples from here at SREcon, there are chock full of people, great examples of how they were able to transform their organizations with this sort of thing. Who here has an interesting story that we don't have time to share? But just off the top of your heads, raise your hand if you think that you have an interesting story about how SRE provided value to your organization, right? Look around, memorize the five people next to you, and say hello to them real quick, right? And count me in as one of those people.
SRE was relatively new when I joined LinkedIn, and so we were transitioning from more kind of classic operations to SRE. We tried to sell the benefits and show the pluses. So essentially, it became a big PR campaign within the company. So if you have one group within a much larger organization, if you can PR the hell out of that and show how this is working and get buy-in, not just from the top, but from the developers as well, that helps really sell it.
And that's a wrap. Thank you, everyone.